This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello and welcome to episode 78 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. We've got a lot to talk about in this episode, including some thoughts on upcoming Dreamcast games and some important news about a new Kickstarter project we think you'll find interesting. But first, introductions. My name is Tom and I'm joined by three scholars from the University of Dreamcast. First of all, Mike Phelan. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Tom.
How are you doing? All right?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Doing well.
Are you doing hunky-dory?
No, I don't like that term. I'm doing fabulous. That's the word I'm looking for today.
Excellent. I think that's probably the first time I've actually said the word hunky-dory out loud. We're also joined by Martin Irwin. Hello, Martin. How are you doing?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. I am fine and dandy. And yourself?
I'm okay, just okay. And last but not least, Mr. James Harvey. Welcome, James.
Hello, Thomas. I am feeling spiffing.
Fantastic. Good to know. Okay, before we dive into the news and what we've been playing, just wanted to give a quick mention to the fantastic interview our podcasting brethren Andrew Dickinson did with Headhunter producer Stefan Holmquist. You can find that in our back catalogue as the interview made up episode 77 of this very podcast. And on the back of that, we'll be doing more interview-style episodes in the coming weeks and months. So, yeah, go and listen to episode 77 with Headhunter producer Stefan Holmquist. Also, be sure to check out our main blog at www.thedreamcastjunkyard.co.uk for some really great articles in recent weeks, including a great review of Sakura Wars on current gen from Lewis. There's a superb Shenmue retrospective from Brian Vines, who primarily writes for our sister site, the Saturn Junkyard. And of course, Mike's epic Fun with Dreamcast Flags article, which was, I believe, Mike, the result of some fairly severe insomnia.
Yes, yeah, I've had some insomnia in this current lockdown period, and so one night I decided just to write an article about flags. Amazingly enough, the next night I also completely rewrote the entire novel of Around the World in 80 Days into a Dreamcast style blog as well, but we're not going to mention that.
You've got to publish that now, Mike. You can't just...
I know.
You can't tease something that epic and then not publish it. Okay, we'll begin as we always do when Andrew isn't around, and that's by chatting a little bit about what we've been playing recently. I'll go first, just because I want to. So on Dreamcast, I've mainly been playing on Xenocider from Retro Summers, but we're going to talk about that in a little bit, so I won't dwell too much on that. What I'm going to talk about first is a couple of games I've been playing on current gen. One on PlayStation 4 called SnowRunner, and one on the Switch called Streets of Rage 4. SnowRunner is a game about trucks, where you basically drive around a massive sort of open-world sandbox, delivering timber and pipes and all kinds of junk to different destinations. It's actually really kind of relaxing and therapeutic.
When I saw that game, I saw your name written all over it.
So on the Switch, my most played game on the Switch, you know, you can go into your little bio thing and it tells you how many hours you've played on a certain game. Like, all my friends on there have all got like hundreds of hours in like Legend of Zelda or Animal Crossing. My number one played game is MudRunner, which is the prequel to this SnowRunner game, but on the Switch. And it's just so relaxing. You just, you know, log up, you know, put your logs on your truck and drive through the wilderness, getting stuck in bogs and winching your truck out through the mud. It's just so...
It's basically Animal Crossing for truckers.
I've just got visions of them doing a pallet swap and just removing all the mud and replacing it with snow.
It's so good, but there are some really bad bugs in this game. It's like every other time you try and use the map, the game crashes. There's some of the missions you can't complete because you'll get to a trailer park and the trailer is like embedded in the ground, so you can't actually pick it up. That kind of stuff. They need to put a patch out for it. Really, it's a good game, but there are some game-breaking bugs also present. The other game is Streets of Rage 4 on the Switch, which I'm having a lot of fun with. It's a really good sequel to the original series on the Mega Drive. Great music. I really like the art style. It's really playable as well. I just think it's a bit cheap at times. You can get surrounded by enemies really easily. You don't have a block button, whereas some of the enemies do. And it can feel a bit unfair at times, especially some of the boss fights. Has anybody else played it?
Yeah.
What did you think?
I have not.
I thought the same. I thought they captured the spirit, the Streets of Spirits of Speed. It's in my mind already. I thought they captured the Streets of Rage essence quite well. I was quite impressed. I'm not a massive fan of that sort of art style, whether it's kind of trying to look old. So I find it difficult to sort of see past that. But given that it was on Game Pass, I grabbed it and me and my wife played two player for a little bit. It's enjoyable. It's just not something I could play for hours and hours.
I forgot it's on Game Pass on Xbox, isn't it? Yeah.
I got on Game Pass as well. Same as James, really. I was never a big fan not same as James, slightly different. The art style is really nice, but the game itself, I've never been a massive beat 'em up fan, so it's sort of over my head a little bit. It's good. It's a decent game, but I think some of the people online seem to think it's Second Coming, which I don't think it really is.
Yeah, when I first saw the original kind of screenshots and the reveal trailer, I was a bit kind of torn about the art style because it looks like a Flash game from like 1999 or something. But it plays really well, and I think the animation is superb. I know you can get the sort of the retro sprites from the original games as playable characters, which kind of in stark contrast to the like newly drawn backgrounds looks really, really odd.
I bet that does look weird.
Yeah, it doesn't seem right. And yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a great game and it's a really good continuation of the Streets of Rage franchise. I'm enjoying
it. What kind of mix of art style is in, which Street Fighter game is it on Dreamcast where you've got polygonal backgrounds but you've got sprites? I've completely forgot. I should know. I think I've got it. It's one of the Street Fighter.
It's not Third Strike, is it?
Alpha 3?
It's definitely got a 3 in there somewhere.
they've all got three in them.
But yeah, that can be a bit jarring because you're kind of in two worlds then. So for me, I'm pretty much completely with Mike on this. I kind of like the art style, but I really get what you're saying, Tom. I think everyone, well, not everyone, obviously, because you pointed it out, but Flash games from around 2000, you know, early 2000s, a lot of people playing today they've never played a Flash game. You know, they were born after 2000, even, believe it or not. Wow. That's how old we are.
Feel old now, yeah. I feel old.
Yeah, exactly. So that kind of art style doesn't exist in their minds, you know, as a negative thing. They're kind of like, oh, this is cool. And cell shading and all that kind of stuff, yeah, we've seen it done to death, you could say. But I kind of like the art style. I think it kind of works. But as Mike said, it's never... I remember the old ones. I just thought they were a bit naff. Like, they're fine in an arcade. Like, literally, when you were down the arcade, you and a mate would play it for a bit and then you'd walk off. But they weren't the kind of arcade game where I'd come back and try and get a high score or anything like that. I mean, I know people do high score runs on this, and it's very impressive. But, yeah, it's not really for me. So I'm going to wait, basically, until it's on PSN.
I think the actual draw of the draw of the actual name of the franchise is something as well, because there's people who I know who are not big gamers. My brother, for example, who we shared a Mega Drive growing up, and we had the Streets of Rage games. And my brother asked me, like, you know, what I was playing. And I said, oh, Streets of Rage 4. And he's like, what? Streets of Rage 4? There's a fourth one. I was like, well, it only came out a week ago. And he went off and had a look into it. And he texted me back going, oh, wow, that looks amazing. I'm going to get it. I'm going to get it for the kids and show them what we used to play when we were younger. And I was like, well, don't get too ahead of yourself. It's nothing like the old games. But it's a good sort of jumping in point. At this point, I think, is it worth just having a quick chat about the original Streets of Rage 4 on the Dreamcast, the polygonal version? I know there's only kind of some kind of concept video footage out there on the internet of what this game would have looked like. I'm not convinced it would have been very good, to be honest, only because of how other 3D beat-em-ups on the Dreamcast kind of play. So it would have been, I would imagine, something like Zombie Revenge or, dare I mention it, Soul Fighter. What about you guys? What do you think?
As a teenager, I think this was one of my most pined after games to come out on Dreamcast. In obviously the mid 90s, the the sort of the beat 'em up genre or side scrolling beat 'em up genre was huge because it offered something different. And obviously with Streets of Rage, Golden Axe, you know, Double Dragon, and they were so good. And obviously as the 90s drew to a close, as you guys know, it was all about how do all these different genres take that leap to 3D. And you know, regardless that most of them were a bit shit, it was still the novelty factor of them being 3D. And I remember reading about the Dreamcast potential version of Streets of Rage, and yeah, just devastated that it never came out and sort of settled with Dynamite Cop in the end. But for me it was a big loss from what I was looking forward to.
Yeah, I completely forgot about Dynamite Cop when I was thinking about all the different sort of 3D beat 'em ups.
Mm.
Wasn't Fighting Force meant to be part of the Streets of Rage franchise as well, but then was kind of turned down by Sega and went off to become its own game. I'm sure I read something like that.
Yeah, I think Fighting Force 2 was meant to be, it's rumoured to have been the Streets of Rage on Dreamcast. Thank God it wasn't, because it's a terrible, terrible game.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually like Dynamite Cop and Zombie Revenge. They're two of my favourite games on Dreamcast. But I think they're so different. They're so different than than the scrolling, you know, belt beat 'em up, because really it's just an over-the-top. It's not even an arcade as such. It's just over the top action. I think if Streets of Rage had done that, I think it would have probably lost maybe some of the shine off the name. Because even though I'm not the biggest fan of Streets of Rage, I still understand it's a massive appeal to outside of the normal gamers, as Tom said with his brother. And I think if they'd done that, it probably wouldn't have been quite the same, because I think it would have gone on a completely different route.
Yeah.
I'm completely again. Yeah, with Mike on this. Zombie Revenge and Dynamite Cop, they are, or Die Hard Arcade as well. On the second, that those I used to play these co-op with my brother for hours, like countless hours, have sunk into Zombie Revenge. And I remember seeing the film Desperado with these. With the machine guns in the violin cases. And when that's in the game, oh my! It was just like crossover. Amazing. So yeah, absolutely brilliant game. So Streets of Rage done in that format could have been quite cool, though seeing the footage of the game, it comes back to this kind of like, we've got to go 3D with everything. It's what people expect, and that's what kind of crippled the Saturn a bit. And to be honest, the Dreamcast has got some absolutely amazing 3D games, but this is just one of the things where it's kind of like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So a 2D, this is why it's working so well on the PS4 right now.
Yes,
to have the 2D scroller.
I think it had its time. I think Dreamcast, it was that kind of genre. Everyone sort of says now that they wish there was a game like that. I mean, it wouldn't have worked. It had its time. It was a new era of gaming. 3D, you know, first person shooters were coming around in big time. It was a completely different era. So I think to an extent, it's good that they have left it this long, because if they hadn't done, I think again the name would have been tarnished, and I think we wouldn't be having this massive Sega revival as we're having.
I think just to add to that, Mike, as well, you know, it still says a lot that you play this game now, 20 years in the future, and I think unquestionably I'd still rather go back and play Streets of Rage 1, Streets of Rage 2 on American Classics than I would play this one. So to me, that kind of says it all. You know, we've moved on from then.
Mike, what have you been sampling on your console of choice?
Yeah, so I've been, my lockdown sort of come to an end recently, so I'm back at work. So I've had less time gaming, but I have still been playing the Yakuza series. I'm not sure if I mentioned it on a previous podcast, but I'm trying to go through all the Yakuzas on PS4. You know, now that they're free on Xbox One, I've finally decided to actually play the games I've bought on PS4. But I've completed Yakuza 0, which is probably now my favourite game of all time. I think it's actually probably better than Witcher 3 in my mind. Playing Yakuza, Kiwami and Kiwami 2, not as good, but it's a great series. I'm really enjoying that. Actually, to an extent, it's quite funny, actually, because I view it in my head as almost like a 3D version and a sort of evolution of the Streets of Rage type thing. So it's an interesting series. Modern gen stuff, I've been playing it, really. A little bit of Animal Crossing, but I'm not going to mention that because I know that people aren't great fans.
I don't know what you mean, Mike. I don't know what you mean.
On Dreamcast, though, I've been playing quite a few games. I've been trying to go through a lot of the games that are on my card reader. So I've been playing heavily, and James will love this. I've been playing heavily Spirit Speed 1937.
Yeah.
To the point where I won every race. And
Mike, I'm so proud of you.
don't feel overly satisfied.
It's the best game with flags on the Dreamcast, but I'm getting a slight hint of your revisionist history. Sorry, continue.
No, we're hipsters. I mean, we at some point we've got to turn against everything which is popular and make everything which is unpopular popular. So that's what we've got to do. No, it's not a great game, but it was fun. I think actually it's no worse than some other sort of mid tier racing games at the time. So I enjoyed that, and I was playing a bit of V Rally, and I was also playing a little bit of Le Mans, which I play frequently anyway. So a bit of a racing mood for Dreamcast. As well as stuff we're going to talk about in a minute.
Excellent, excellent stuff. Cool. Okay, Martin, what have you been playing?
I have been playing. I'm in an ice hockey club in NHL. The irony is, I can't really ice skate in real life, but there we go. That's the story of it. So I've been playing NHL with my brother mainly on the PS4. That's kind of most evenings during lockdown activity at the moment. I also got Grid, thanks to your recommendation, Tom, actually. And it's just called Grid. But when you Google, I was trying to Google for like reviews and stuff, and there's about 50 games called Grid or Grid something. So it took me ages to find out which bloody one I was buying. But anyway, I just played the demo in the end, and it's got that kind of Toka touring car vibe to it. And it's just bloody good fun, really. It's not a full on sim. And it's not Sega Rally, but it's good. And being in PS Plus, it was reduced cost, so it was kind of a no-brainer.
One thing I noticed one thing I noticed in Grid that kind of annoyed me slightly was if you play from the cockpit view and it's raining, if you reverse camera to look behind you, the rain is coming inside the car.
Codemasters have never got the weather right, have they? Codemasters have never quite managed to get weather in racing games perfect.
I would have liked kind of better crash physics and things like this too, but to be honest, like how good it looks, I don't have a PS4 Pro, I don't have a 4K TV, if you can believe it or not, and it looks amazing, so I can't even imagine how good it looks. Like, is it a VR game as well? I have no idea.
No, there's no VR, but I do have the PS4 Pro and the 4K TV, and like you say, it does look absolutely stunning on a 4K screen, so...
So I've been playing that. I've also I've picked up... So I've had this game for ages on the PS Vita, Power Stone Collection, which is actually a PSP game.
Yeah.
And I completed it for the first time. I've never really done this single player campaign, because for me, Power Stone, like, why would I? It was always a co-op, and loved it. So I completed that, and that was good. I forgot how tight the controls are. It's just such a good game. So this is me saying, please make it for the Switch, port it over to the Switch. Then on the Dreamcast, I played Headhunter. So I definitely didn't complete Headhunter. That was the aim, but it's bloody difficult, to be honest. But I've got soft, I think, like my gaming ability. It's actually quite a difficult game.
Some of the boss fights get really difficult, don't they?
And in all honesty, it's an older game, so the controls are a bit. It's not that they're loose, they're just a bit different to how kind of the consensus is on how characters and people move and things like that now. So, but it's still a fantastic game. And if you haven't yet listened to the podcast interview with the developer for Headhunter, please do. And then I've also been playing this demo that I'll talk about a bit later, the Dreamcast. So that's a surprise for later in this podcast, I guess.
Excellent. Good stuff. Okay. And last but not least, James, enlighten us.
Why am I always last but not least? Every time. Next time, I want to be first at everything.
Or you could just be last and least.
Yeah.
Fair. Okay, that's fair. Set expectations low. Those of you who know me by now know that I pretty much play racing games and talk about racing games and write about racing games. And there's no surprise that my most played list recently on current and previous gen consoles has been dominated by racing games. And some good ones, some okay ones, and some pretty terrible ones. The one I spent most time with on newer stuff has been iRacing. I've been, as Mike alluded to, I have been streaming my sim races, which has been a lot of good fun.
You never mentioned you stream.
Shut up.
I watched you crash out last night.
You did indeed. Martin was there with his pom-poms cheering me on. So I've been streaming a lot of iRacing, which is great fun. And I actually did a retro stream on Saturday morning, and I played through Formula One 95 on the PlayStation, which was really good fun, just to kind of go through the entire championship. And despite its age, it's actually still very playable today. And, you know, Murray Walker on the commentary will never, ever get old, which always gives you an excuse to fire it up.
There is a tenuous Dreamcast link there, you know.
Go on.
It was developed by Bizarre Creations, who went on to develop MSR.
Very well done.
So there you go.
Very well done. So Dreamcast-wise, assuming this is the same demo that Martin alluded to, I'm going to ruin the surprise now anyway. I played through and wrote an article, which we're going to talk about later, the Arcade Racing Legends demo on Dreamcast. So I'll not mention anything more about that for now. I'm sure we'll come back to that in a sec. For some reason, I had an urge to buy Roadsters on Dreamcast.
It's a bad urge.
Yeah, again, my obsession with buying sealed Dreamcast games and opening them is also well known by now. But I managed to find a sealed copy of Roadsters for like 10 quid or something. And I thought, oh, screw it, I'll buy it. I bought that, opened it, played it, put it back in the box, and it's now on the shelf.
Did you sniff the book?
Yeah, of course I did. That's why I buy a new one. It's like an event. I get ready, get my my gloves on, undo all this.
Have you seen that iPhone advert where the guy's peeling the plastic off the new iPhone?
Yeah, drops it.
I have that image, but with you peeling off the wrapper in a Dreamcast game.
I might do a live stream of opening like 10 sealed Dreamcast games in a row. And the other Dreamcast game, the final one that I've been playing, is a good friend of the podcast, PC Wizard. I am a subscriber to his YouTube channel, a member of his YouTube channel, and he asked what games he'd like members to see him stream. And my suggestion was a game I played a lot of back in the days of Dreamcast when I was a youngster, which was Super Runabout. And after watching his stream and being frustrated with his very poor performance, he won't mind me saying, I fired up the game myself just to load up my save from back in 2001 or something, and just kind of had a bit of a mooch about and just remembered how much fun that game is. That's so all racing games for me, and that's where I am.
Excellent. Yeah, Super Runabout's a funny one. It's a great game, and it's an interesting open, semi-open world, but the car handling model really frustrates me, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, even worse as well, Tom, of course, is that the one we get is the reworked one, because the original Japanese release had even worse handling.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because there are certain games that were kind of reworked for a PAL release. I know you've probably got this encyclopedic knowledge in your mind already, Mike, but yes, as you've enlightened me in the past, this is one of those games. There's several others, aren't there? Surf Rocket Races is another one, isn't it?
Surf Rocket Races is an odd one, and I'm going to talk about one. I'll do an article on that in the future, I think. But Surf Rocket Races is a completely different game, but actually we got the first one. So we actually got the really poor version in PAL in the American territories, and then the Japanese got a really good version, Power Jet Racing 2001, which is completely reworked and a really fun game. But there's Sonic Adventure, Blue Stinger, there's a couple of other ones as well I can't think of.
Cool. Yeah, it's interesting. There's loads of little facets of information about Dreamcast library that is not very well known. And that's all good stuff. Let's move on to our first piece of news then, news proper even. And that is that this thing called Mode is coming out from Terra Onion. Mode, M-O-D-E, which stands for, let me have a look, it's the Multi-Optical Disc Emulator. I'm sure you've seen this if you are a fan of the Dreamcast or the Saturn, because this thing looks like it might revolutionise how we play games without an actual disc, even though storage mediums for the Dreamcast have been around for a long time, SD readers, the GDMU, the CF card reader. This thing is a circuit board which is designed specifically to be placed into the Dreamcast with no soldering or electronics knowledge whatsoever. You take your DD-ROM drive out, you put the Mode in, you can actually attach an SD reader to it, or a USB stick, or an SSD or a hard drive, and it will basically play any Dreamcast game in any format. straight from your storage device. Looks like it could be a bit of a game changer. I know that these kind of things exist already, but this is a no-nonsense kind of easy way of getting involved in this kind of thing if you've got a Dreamcast or a Saturn knocking about. Mike, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, I've got to mention the name of the company, because Terra Onion is basically the complete opposite of my online handle, Space Turnip, which is just, it worries me slightly. But anyway, getting away from that slightly. I don't know. It's, do we need another solution? I mean, we've had so many storage solutions for Dreamcast that, you know, I'm starting to think that the problem wasn't really as big as in the first place. But I like the idea. I like the fact it can work on Saturn and Dreamcast. But it's quite expensive, and
yeah, is it like 100? It's like £200, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think with the knockoff GDEMUs on pretty much every selling website at the current time, I don't really see why people would go for it. I don't want to be negative, but I just think sometimes there's as you mentioned in the podcast before, there's this strain of thought at the current time with Dreamcast community that you have to completely like pimp your Dreamcast out and just sort of do all this new stuff to it. I mean, most of the stuff can be done on emulators anyway. I think if you're going to be doing this much cannibalizing of your Dreamcast, this much sort of a Frankenstein console you're going to have, you might as well just emulate stuff in the first place. That's what I would do. So I don't really see that. I'm not target market. I'm not someone who's particularly cares. So yeah, I'm just, you know, still slightly worried the fact that they've taken my name and inversed it. I have nothing to do with this company whatsoever.
Are you even a real Dreamcast fan if you haven't changed the LED light on the front of the unit?
No, yeah. The question should be, are you even a real Dreamcast fan if you don't unplug and plug in your controller at least 5 times to make the controller board work? this thing does have some quite impressive tech specs actually on the board. It's got a 32-bit processor on there. It's got an FPGA. I think the main kind of selling point that they're getting at is that it's got really high transfer rates, so you don't have to wait for it to load games, that kind of thing. And, of course, it's got the dual purpose of the Saturn and Dreamcast compatibility. This company, Terra Onion, they're not new to this this field. They've got a range of products out for different systems, you know, the Mega Drive, the Neo Geo, and all kinds of things. But, yeah, I think it's the compatibility with all kinds of old flavours of the Dreamcast and the Saturn that makes this quite sort of tantalising for a lot of people, I think. James, have you got any views on this?
Very similar to Mike. I mean, from a tech perspective, it's very impressive. As you said, Tom, what they've managed to produce is something that is appealing from that side of things. Whether it's something that I think is needed, I think is a completely different question. And I tend to sort of sit with Mike on this. I think there's enough solutions out there, a lot more affordable. And I think, you know, if the sort of person who might buy this, I think, is somebody who's going to be, you know, massively into their retro gaming, or specifically into their Dreamcast gaming. And I think if you're that far into, if you're that much of a Dreamcast fan at this point, you've probably got about half a dozen consoles with various different solutions anyway. So, yeah, I think, you know, it looks like a great product. Obviously, I've not used it or seen it myself, but, it looks like a very well accomplished product. I'm definitely not the target audience for it. And I think, as I said, that the price tag will definitely mean that it's going to be for very serious collectors only, or rather, maybe not collectors is
not
the wrong
collector
term, but yeah. But yeah, it doesn't do it for me, I'm afraid.
I think I'm kind of split, so if you'll excuse the pun, I think there's a few layers to Terra Onion. So, yeah, it took me ages to think of that. what's been said already, really. It's not really for serious collectors, but if you've got a serious collection, this might be a way to have a particular unit, you know, that's a certain shade of yellow that you're going to restore or whatever, and you're going to put in this Nocturna fan and all this kind of, all these lights and all that kind of stuff, then you could put this in it and have one system hooked up in a certain way to run everything. And yeah, I do see the appeal there. To me, actually, it's more the Saturn has more appeal than the Dreamcast in terms of what this could do. But whether it's expensive, So you've got to be a really serious pirate to want to do this. I mean, is it really piracy now? I don't know. Let's not get into it. But I really like it.
That wasn't me.
It just comes naturally. I would actually like to kind of review one and try one out. So Terra Onion, if you're listening, send us one for review.
I don't think they will after our review, after our preview of it, I don't think.
You can't just kiss someone's ass until they, you know, it's got to be honest. And I do see the appeal. I see the appeal. You've got the hardware there, because half of the gaming experience is to have that controller in your hands that you can then complain about or not, or enjoy it or not, or whatever. And the VMU, and you just have everything there, and it's kind of authentic, right? It's like having a classic car with the Tesla powertrain or a battery engine in. It's that kind of level of thing. You could just have a completely new electric car, or you could have your old timer and run it off petrol. But you could do this kind of, it's that, that's why it's so niche. I think they'd sell loads if it was 100 quid. Yeah. I think 200, they will sell some, but if I was running their company, I'd have changed this pricing. I know that it's not going to be free to make, and they've spent probably considerable amounts in R&D. But as Mike said, to be honest, from my side, I've got a decent sized collection anyway, nothing anywhere near as close to what Mike has, for example. But to be honest, emulating on a nice TV or screen with a Raspberry Pi and all this kind of stuff, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's going to be tough.
I think it's important as well to point out the fact that, because I've noticed this on our Facebook group quite a lot recently, people sort of saying how much money they spent on their pimped out Dreamcast, and some people are saying they spent over £700 on pimping out a Dreamcast. I have lots of pointless visual novels, so I can't talk about someone's buying habits, but I don't see why you'd spend that much money on a Dreamcast when you can just basically get a gaming PC, a converter for the Dreamcast pad, and do everything the same. I don't see why, if you want an authentic experience, why you spend that much for a non-authentic experience.
It's like people that take a £200 1992 Ford Fiesta and put £1,200 alloy wheels on it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that also biographical?
All right, Mr. Spoiler.
Oh God, we're getting personal. I think it's like, okay, so yeah, you could end up then with it. Let's say you could end up with a Dreamcast that basically is a grand, and you get a secondhand Xbox One, whatever. I don't even know the naming nomenclatures, for like 100 quid or 100 and a bit. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't do this or whatever. And we all love to play Dreamcast games. But it's not like it can't be done already. Like, I've been playing on my phone. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been playing Dreamcast games in better output on my TV than I can with an actual Dreamcast, because I don't have DCM HDMI. I've been playing on my phone into my TV using a PlayStation 4 controller. I mean, it's sacrilege, right? In 2000, the kind of 16-year-old me would have been swearing at this version of me using a Sony product and this phone on a Sony TV, all this kind of stuff. But yeah, that's just how you can do it now. You can literally just play Dreamcast on a train. Granted, I want it all on a Switch, but that's a whole separate rant. But I think sinking a grand into a Dreamcast for flexing online?
Okay, so the Terra Onion mode is due out, I believe it's July 2020. Mm-hmm. If you would like to check that out, just type Terra Onion into Google and you will find it. We'll see how that pans out in the near future. Okay, let's move on to our next item of news. This is more about an actual piece of software than hardware. This is Xenocider from RetroSummers, our friends at RetroSummers. I have played the beta version, so has Mike, and that's because we are on the beta testers program. We were asked, invited. Not sure how that works out with ethics in video game journalism, but we have played it and we've given our thoughts. Well, I've given my thoughts. I quite like it. It's not a perfect game. For those people who don't know what we're talking about, Xenocider is this new into the screen shooter. It's kind of on rails. You play as this kind of cybernetic woman called Zara. You are running forwards or flying forwards or swimming forwards into the screen.
You mean like Space Harrier?
Kind of like Space Harrier, or Sin and Punishment or something along those lines. Shooting all the enemies on the screen. You basically, you've got five lanes that you can travel between. So you use the triggers to switch backwards and forwards, left and right. Use the thumbstick to change the angle of the reticle and shoot the enemies. And yeah, it's an interesting game. It's not perfect. It's quite difficult. I found a couple of bugs that I've relayed back to them, most notably the one where the name of the game is spelt wrong on the VMU display. So I'm going to take full credit for that one. It's a really interesting game. I mean, it's a bespoke engine that they've created from scratch. Chewy, the guy who created all of the Neo Geo emulators for the Dreamcast, he is the lead programmer. He's a very talented guy. And yeah, I mean, you can see my thoughts on the beta version by going to the Dreamcast Junkyard blog and having a look for the preview that I did a couple of weeks back. Mike, I'm interested to know what you think of the game. How was it for you?
Yeah, so I am I'm not the biggest fan of that style of game, Space Harrier. And I approached it with sort of a slight trepidation because I know being part of the beta thing, they want feedback, and I'm not greatest at giving feedback about beta games. So I sort of approached it thinking, I know I'm going to be terrible at this game. Let's see what it's like. Everything you said obviously explains how the game plays. It is very much sort of an on-rail, inter-screen shooter. It's very quick reflexes are needed. Mm-hmm. I find that my age is catching up with me because I find I died far too quickly. But I think the thing that's most important to me, and away from sort of the game to an extent, the engine itself is fantastic. I mean, we've had a 3D game already on Dreamcast. We've had 4x4 Jam, which I'm a big fan of. And we've had Arcade Racing Legends coming soon. But for me, the Zenosider is superb. The quality of what they've done and the quality of everything in the game. You know, I mean, I'm talking about movies, FMV parts, the sort of story side of it. It's a really polished game.
Yeah.
It's sort of, it jars slightly with how the game plays because it is very much like an arcade sort of like quick reflexes style game. But actually, I'm really, really impressed with what Retrosomus have done in terms of just actually really focusing on the engine and the frame rate and how smooth the game is really impressed me. There's no slowdown. There's no sort of issues at all like that. And that's massively impressive for a game which, again, let's remember, it didn't get the Kickstarter in the end. It didn't succeed with the Kickstarter. This isn't one of the games which just had thousands of pounds put into it and then goes disappearing for 6 years, mentioning no names. This is a game which, and it's not come from a developer who's made loads and loads of games in the past on Dreamcast. This is almost like a labour of love to an extent, and they've done a fantastic job. I think it's really, really good. It's tough as hell, and I think I've got to like the third level possibly, which is impressive for me. But I was really impressed. The game is really smooth. I think if you even if the game and the description of the game puts you off, I think just to see what they've done on a Dreamcast, it's good enough just to get it for that reason and support an indie developer who've got many other projects in the pipeline.
Yeah. And just on the point you made there about it being I don't like to use the term a failed Kickstarter. However, this is a game that was first announced or first revealed to us back in 2015. So that's nearly 5 years ago, June 2015, I believe. And these guys, they've all got actual day jobs. They do all of this stuff in their spare time. They get together, they have kind of like coding sessions, and they blog about it on their own website. And it's just really impressive to see where it came from to where we're at now. The implementation of all these, as you say, impressive cinematics in between menus and that kind of thing. I was not expecting that. I was not expecting to go into a game on the Dreamcast in 2020 where you select your level, start the game, and then suddenly there's this instantaneous cinematic which then goes into another menu screen, which then goes into another cinematic, which then goes into the game. I was like, this is what you expect from a current gen. I mean, fair enough, the fidelity of the video is not up there with, you know, what you'd see on a PS4 or an Xbox One or whatever. But the fact that they've been that ambitious to try and do something like that and the fact that it works, it's so impressive. And I have to, you know, take my hat off to Retrosomus for the job they've done, really, with this game. Yeah. So, yeah. And this game is due to, there's no definite release date yet. It's, you know, it's a case of it'll be done when it's done. However, it is targeting this year. And, you know, they've had a lot of pre-orders, you know, nothing but positive feedback from the video that I put up on YouTube and the preview that I put up on the main blog. You know, the comments have been overwhelmingly positive. And I think the community kind of respects the fact that they're not an outfit who has just
sort of jumped on the fact that the Dreamcast is now on this kind of second wave of popularity and have gone, oh, let's make something quick to cash in. These guys have been there, you know, since, you know, as I say, 2015, making this game.
I've just, so you mentioned on YouTube, Tom, there. So on, yeah, the Dreamcast Junkyard YouTube channel. I've just, only just now, whilst you both have been discussing the game, had a look at a couple of the gameplay videos, and it looks fantastic. It looks almost, this could almost be, in some of the screenshots that, you know, you could take, it could be like a 360 game or definitely an Xbox game. This is impressive, really impressive stuff from such a small outfit. And what Mike was saying about difficulty, I can absolutely see that, because you've got kind of a very low draw distance and these things fly at you quick. So I think they could tone down the speed in some of this. I mean, this looks absolutely brutal in terms of like reflexes. You weren't joking.
No, it is very much important to note the fact that when I say it's difficult, it is difficult because it's I don't know if Tom feels the same, but I felt like it took me a few goes to get used to the controls.
Yeah,
I wasn't used to having to use the triggers to sort of move, and it threw me off a little bit. But it really does. The difficulty comes from the reflexes. I mean, it's not about unfair enemies. It's not about, you know, sort of being swamped with enemy fire as such, although that does happen. It's just the fact that it's yourself. And I think every single time I died, I felt like I was dying because I'd done something wrong and not because the game had been too difficult, which is unusual in Dreamcast arcade games for me. It feels like a really good, it's a completely different genre, but it feels to me like a really, really good shoot 'em up in terms of the fact that, you know, that if you like Zero Gunner 2 is a great example. I love Zero Gunner 2 because of the fact that when I die in Zero Gunner 2, it's because I've made a mistake, and that's how I feel with Xenosider.
Yeah, absolutely. They could slow this down by maybe 20%, and it would, for me, just looking at it, it would still work, but it's extremely impressive. From a bit of a shoot 'em up type guy, that's like my genre of choice, really. I would just say, yeah, you could slow this down just a little, just slow it down a bit, because it looks fantastic.
I've been sat here in silence, just amazed that Mike managed to not name the other thieving bastards from Kickstarter, to be honest, or the other game that went unnamed.
What, Elysian Shadows?
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you mentioned it.
I'm going to beat that out in the edit. Xenosider, it comes out this year, 2020. Me and Mike both suitably impressed, and I'm sure anyone who's pre-ordered it also in the beta program will also be very impressed with what they've seen so far. From one preview, let's jump into another one, and I'm going to let James talk about this one.
Yeah, so Arcade Racing Legends is a game that again got kickstarted middle of last year, a few question marks, because I think originally it wasn't mentioned on the Kickstarter that it was going to be a port of a mobile game, or at least the foundations were going to be. But it was it looked interesting. It's obviously, as the name suggests, an arcade racing game. But the thing that Pixel Heart, who are producing the game, have done to kind of hook Sega fans in, I guess, is they have very much tried to, you know, keep the spirit of the late 90s arcade racing visual kind of experience, and to that end, it features a number of remarkably similar vehicles that you may find in other household name arcade racing games. And actually, that was kind of one of the things that appealed to me, and just kind of throw them all together in one game. So you've got, you know, some of the rally cars from Sega Rally. You've got the taxis from Crazy Taxi. You've got the Porsche from Scud Racer. There's a ton of different stuff in there. And there's a load of guest cars as well for some of the backers on Kickstarter. So I was in two minds as to whether to back this back last year. Decided in the end that it was priced reasonably enough to get a physical version in a proper PAL Dreamcast box. So I just decided to bite the bullet and go for it, despite my reservations about what the handling looked like in the early days. But kind of went ahead, backed it. And the game got delayed. It was supposed to be released last year. It got delayed until, I don't think they've got an actual release date this year, but they have said it's it is coming out in 2020. And in the recent update, they provided a downloadable demo of a recent build for backers to be able to grab. And as you alluded to, Tom, I wrote a quick preview on the Dreamcast Junkyard just to kind of go through. And I was very pleasantly surprised. I think my expectations were not immensely high, just because, as I said, the handling seemed a bit too floaty for my liking. But immediately, my reservations with the handling were completely vanished straight away. It felt really nice to play, a nice balance between kind of having that really floaty loose end and still feels like you're in control of the thing, which is good. Visually, I think it looks excellent. It's exactly what I signed up for. Really colourful, really varied backdrops from the Arctic snow of that stage through to the desert stage, and then you've got the kind of forest stage. Good variety there. I think there's another three tracks in the full game, but those are the only three that are available in the demo. But you know, again, being a huge racing fan and you know, growing up playing arcade races, and as you guys know, Cruising USA, Cruising World are two of my biggest kind of guilty pleasures. I love those games and how they visually appear, and I think this is right along those lines. So the demo's got not a huge amount of depth, as you'd expect. You can sort of play the first 3 days of Korea, which kind of have you learning, first of all, just how to drive the car, secondly, how to drive the car to a time limit, and thirdly, how to kind of drive the car without using your brakes and still within a time limit, which I thought was quite a nice way of introducing you. And then you can just do a time trial mode on each of the circuits. So a bit disappointing I didn't get to try sort of actual racing against any AI cars. But evidently that wasn't in the original build. And the menus look really nice. You can cycle through the cars in the garage, really, really nice 3D models that you can see and cycle through. Again, there's only three cars that you can play with in the demo, but there appears to be, you know, well over a dozen in the final version, which will be good. And as I said in my preview, really, the only thing I didn't like in the demo, and I think, unfortunately, again, as I alluded to, it will be a pretty big deal as far as replayability goes, is the way in which they have added kind of track boundaries. So they've got sponsor boards, you know, continuously on the left and the right of the circuit, which gives you absolutely no runoff whatsoever. And firstly, from an aesthetics point of view, it looks pretty bad, because it just looks like, you know, even if it was an invisible wall, I think it would look a hell of a lot better, but it just doesn't look great that they've got, it just looks like the track's been marked out the entire way. Mm-hmm. But even worse, from a gameplay perspective, you can basically just wall ride without with very little slowdown, to be honest. So I think that will fundamentally ruin, you know, any sort of longevity the game may have if they don't address that. But fingers crossed, in the original Kickstarter campaign, they did show some screenshots where the barriers weren't right up against the playable road area. So fingers crossed they are starting to think maybe that was just kind of as they started to obviously build the levels out, and they hadn't sorted all of the sort of safe zones and clipping areas and stuff like that yet. But yeah, apart from that, super looking forward to it now. I think it'll be a great little game to add to the Dreamcast collection, and nice to see, obviously, a new racing game. You know, in the last few years, as you know, there's been quite a few different genres have started to pop up as far as indie games are concerned, and this is a really nice polished racing game that feels like it would have been well at home if it was released in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Interesting thoughts there, James. I will say your article was really cool. I did enjoy reading about what you thought were the positives and the negatives. For me, one of the negatives that I saw initially when I first saw this game running was the fact that the cars looked like they were actually spinning, like with a sort of a... Imagine you had the car and you'd put a pole through the middle of it, and when the cars turned, they looked like they were kind of spinning on a central axis.
which kind of put me off
like,
a little bit.
Daytona and Scud Race.
I was thinking more of F1 World Grand Prix on the N64, which kind of had that same effect from the outside external view. So that kind of put me off a little bit. I know that they've slightly changed it now, so it doesn't look quite that bad. But the barriers thing is a big problem for me as well. These big neon barriers just look so out of place and so bad that to have no actual kind of resistance against them either, so you could literally just slide around the course at full speed.
Yeah.
It takes out any of the skill of the game.
It does. And I quite like, because I mean, they're obviously not real brands, but they're like fake Dunlop badges, fake Michelin badges. I quite like stuff like that. I like it when people get kind of creative with stuff. But yeah, completely, you know, it's just the fact they are consistent for the entire circuit. And it's just, there's about four different types of sponsor boards, and it just gets very repetitive very quickly. And as you said, it doesn't look right when you're driving through the middle of this like Arctic winter rally stage, and you can just see constant sponsor boards either side of you. I think it ruins the way the game looks, and also the way it plays in one go, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think one thing very quickly, I've played the beta, the latest beta that they put out for the game, which I think is similar to the demo, but it's slightly different. So I've played on all the new tracks, and I've played with some of the new cars. And a couple of things I want to really, really quickly. I agree with everything James said, but I played the city track. Looks absolutely fantastic. I mean, this is a proper, a real good 1990s Sega track. Also played the Scud Race type of, Scud Race, the one which is underwater, the sort of submarine type thing. And some of the car designs are really, really out there. I mean, they're properly good car designs. Really enjoyable to see some of them on there. It's still got all the problems that James said, but I think they're putting so much work into it. It's definitely, they're still working on it. They haven't got a finished product yet.
Hasn't it been announced for the Switch as well now?
Yes. Yeah.
And PlayStation 4. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, which I was a bit disappointed at, to be honest. I would have wouldn't have minded hearing that after the game got released on Dreamcast, but there's always that element of how much time are they going to spend getting that those versions ready to launch at the same time now. Maybe not. You know, that's I've got no reasons to assume that, but. I think it does take something away from it when it's. I'm sounding like a 90s console warrior now, and I think it does take something away from it when it does when these games do get released on current gen stuff. You know, I think it just removes a bit of that that magic. I think of releasing
why,
a new
why,
game.
Why would you want to play it? I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
No offense to the game developers, but the only reason I'm interested in the game is because on Dreamcast. Mm. I mean, if it's as a PS4 release, it's gonna look quite poor. I mean, things like Horizon Chase are out. Horizon Chase, they do a retro racer on a modern gen console. That's, you know, top tier. This is sort of it's great and it looks fantastic because it's working on Dreamcast technology. If it was on another console, I mean, I don't really think it has any appeal.
No, that's a good point. Okay, so that's Arcade Racing Legends. That is out at some point in 2020. We're not entirely sure when, but it's also coming to the Switch and the PS4, I just learned today. So keep an eye out for that. And from one game that's on multiple systems, including the Dreamcast, let's move on to another one. Martin, you have been playing another game, which is coming to the Switch and the Dreamcast. Please enlighten us.
I have, yeah. So this is, you can get this on the Switch eShop at present, I think, for like just over a fiver, something like this.
I think it's, at the time of recording this podcast, it's still to be released, but I believe it's coming in the next week or so.
Ah, okay, right. It's part of the Shoot 'em Up collection, or Shmup collection, for the Nintendo Switch, which is, released 20th of May or something like that, which you can... buy online or pre-order at least. So this particular game is a new beta for the Dreamcast, a game called Wolf Lane. Now, it's a bit of a funny name. For me, this smacks of Japanese non-native English kind of naming. So it's written Wolf Lame, but I think they were trying to go for kind of wolf flame, like a wolf and a flame together. Yeah. And only have one fl sound. But unfortunately, every time I read it, it's wolf flame or wolf flame. So anyway. Right, yeah, so I've been playing the beta of this. Now, I'm, as I said earlier, a bit of a shmup fan or fanatic. I'm really into my cave shoot-em-ups for the most part, so that's the Dodonpachi series and other kind of games from them. But also Darius, and yeah, to be honest, if it is a shoot-em-up, I'll give it a go. Now, this one kind of took me a little bit by surprise in that the key elements to a shoot-em-up really... if you were building one from zero, which is when this game would have been built, it would have been started from a point where you move a little sprite around, and how you move away from bullets and things is kind of the key to the entire game. Now, unfortunately, this beta at the moment has so much input lag that when you press right, there's such a significant delay that I've not tried timing yet, but it's getting on towards at least half a second. That when you try and move out of the way of something, even if your reactions are good enough, it doesn't matter because of the lag, it means you still get hit. So it's extremely difficult to play at the moment through input lag, basically. Mm. But taking and general slowdown of the game, actually. So when you're playing this, so it needs further optimization. When you're playing the game, it will just run... yeah, at a lower flame rate. Oh, God, I'm stuck. flame rate. Oh, goodness. It's because I'm just looking at this word over and over again. The frame rate will drop, and it just stays there. And it doesn't actually drop. It's just low. And then when you die, when your ship is hit, then, for reasons I don't know or understand, possibly sprite allocations, the frame rate goes up to, like, 60... frames a second, and then it's incredibly smooth. Now, looking at videos on YouTube of the old Steam games, so this came to Steam in 2016, and it was reasonably well received. And if you look at videos on YouTube, if the input lag goes away and the frame rate can be like this, then this should be a really good game. And this will not be one of those kind of Euro shoot 'em ups that we had in years gone by that I won't mention certain games. Instead, let's discuss this one as if it's kind of a new release. Now, it's not very old. It's probably about 5 years old, or it's development 2014, some leaked pictures and things like that. It looks like it was made in about 1993, something like that. It's a very authentic kind of sprite reproduction. The color palette is very kind of Desert Strike and Urban Strike, or at least how I remember those games looking. I haven't actually played Desert Strike in a few years.
I'm getting a very distinct Raiden vibe. Remember the original Raiden?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Mm. It's absolutely smack on with that kind of that game. So it's exactly like this. It's got a really cool power-up system, though. And this affects the ship on both sides. So you can have different kinds of guns depending on what color is flashing on the power up. When you get it, you get a different kind of laser or kind of big kind of cannon type thing. And this is really good. And the gameplay mechanics, when you see it running at full speed with full input control, it looks difficult. It doesn't look like it's, you know, oh, this will be a piece of cake and it's boring. You get these kind of sniper tanks coming out of nowhere, like cheeky. They'll just park up and just fire a really high-speed bullet at you. And that's where, if the input lag is so large and you try and move out of the way and it's useless, it becomes very frustrating. Also, with the death, when your ship gets hit, it kind of restarts from ages before, rather than having, say, three continues and you restart at the exact point where you got killed. Which, yeah... That's incredibly kind of frustrating and puts you off replay, to be honest. They're hard enough as they are, shoot 'em ups, that once you kind of, a lot of people will just play through them and just keep mashing continue and then go, oh, that wasn't too bad. And then press continue like 15 times. And you say, well, the skill is if you can do it on kind of one credit. So this kind of one CC that you're aiming for. To do it with this would be a challenge as well, but to kind of get the replay value, you want to be able to, if you do die, just pick up and keep going sometimes, and that seems like it's going to be a bit tough to deal with. So the difficulty looks tough. But if anything, that's a good thing. It looks a bit sparse, and yeah, it's got some beautiful sprite work, though. It really does look good. I'm hoping that the Dreamcast version can just sort out the issues with frame rate. I'm happy with it to be a state. It just needs to be stable, whatever it is, and to get rid of this input lag. That's the key, is the input lag, to really get that as low as possible.
It sounds like this has got similar issues to a previous game from Josh Prod, which was a Battlecrust, which in itself was a Steam release from a few years ago, sort of re-released on the Dreamcast, and that had some serious issues with slowdown and input lag. So I'm thinking that maybe the same issues with this game. Also, it's worth noting that on the Switch, it is part of a bundle of three games called the Shoot 'em Up Collection. And one thing that struck me, and we spoke about this kind of off the air, is that the other two games in the bundle, they actually look pretty bad. There's one called Armed 7, and there's another one called Cetaceus. They look like Atari Jaguar games.
Armed 7, Tom, is actually a Dreamcast game as well.
Oh, is it?
It was on the last batch of Josh Prod games. Armed 7 was one of the games.
Oh, right, okay.
Very similar to Wolf Lane, or however you pronounce it. I think it's probably possibly a sequel. I think possibly Wolf Lane's a sequel to Armed 7. It plays okay on Dreamcast, nothing spectacular. But one thing I will say really quickly is the fact the soundtrack on Armed 7 is worth buying a game for alone. It's one of the greatest soundtracks of any indie game. So hopefully the soundtrack for this new one will also be good.
Soundtrack for Wolf Lane is pretty lame.
Damn. So,
yeah, that one's free. I don't actually know what the standard soundtrack sounds like, but I want to check out this other game now you've mentioned that, Mike, because I'm into my shmup soundtrack.
Cool. So there's quite a sort of spread of new games coming to the Dreamcast in the near future. There's another game coming out at the end of June, which will be completely free and available to download. And that game is called After the Fall. It's a Quake Total Conversion by a guy called Pip Naylor, who has taken the Quake engine and created his own game about humans fighting for freedom against an alien invasion. I'm not going to give too much away, because I'm going to do a full review on the Dreamcast Junkyard along with a video and everything like that, so that's coming soon. But it will be available from the end of June, and it will be free from Pip Naylor's website, so keep an eye out for that. I will tell you now that it's actually really, really good. We did do a preview on it last year sometime. If you just go to the main blog and type After the Fall, you'll find some gameplay footage and a preview article. But I can tell you that it's shaping up to be a really good, really good shooter. So yeah, and for the grand price of nothing, you can't really complain. Quite a few things to look forward to in the near future for the Dreamcast. Something else that you've got to look forward to as well is a project that is being launched by our good friend Andrew Dickinson, author of Dreamcast Year One. We are working with him on Dreamcast Year Two, which, as the name suggests, is all about the second year of the Dreamcast. Andrew, since launching his highly successful book, has joined the team here at the Dreamcast Junkyard. Obviously, he presents some of the issues or episodes of the DreamPod, as you probably heard, and will be writing for the blog as well in the near future. But yeah, this is quite exciting. We've got loads of interviews lined up. We've got loads of new features. The book is going to be a lot bigger than the previous book. So yeah, look out for that in the near future on Kickstarter, and we'll be throwing our collective weight behind it. Hopefully you will see something you like and back the book.
I never realised Andrew wrote a book.
He's never mentioned it. No, I only found out last week.
He's quite reserved about mentioning that. I don't know about you, Tom. I haven't negotiated my fees yet for writing a Spirit of Speed retrospective in year two with Andrew. So
priceless.
Once we agree on those six figures, I'll make sure we fully disclose that.
look out for that Dreamcast Year Two coming very soon. I think, unless anyone else has got anything else, they've got a.
The only thing I was going to mention, Tom, on the news front is. Yeah. It's the test drive cycles. GoFundMe has went live. I don't know if it's worth talking about too much, but I thought it was interesting that it's been up for almost a week now and has only raised €12 compared to when the Heroes of Might and Magic GoFundMe went up. I think it was raised within so many hours of the thing going live. So whether that's Whether that's telling of the quality of the game or the fact that it's such a small kind of playable, you know, pre-alpha type thing, I don't know. But be interesting to see if that actually does make its modest 160 euro target.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting to watch the video as well of the game. I think the video is basically the entirety of the demo, so that's probably why it's not attracting as much interest as the Heroes of Might and Magic alpha did. And did you notice the way that the rider kind of contorts into all these weird shapes every time he crashes? So then when the bike resets, he's kind of upside down or kind of... Have you seen extreme ironing or extreme planking or whatever it is where people do planks on top of like random objects? It kind of ends up like that. So I think it's worth the entry for that alone, to be honest.
Yeah, it's something I'd like to play just for completionist sake, just to have a copy of it burned on a disc somewhere. But I won't be going out of my way to do so, put it that way.
Yeah, I think that just about does it for this episode. We've tried for over an hour now. So thank you very much for listening and, supporting the podcast. It just remains for me to say thank you to my co-hosts. We can all be found collectively on Twitter at the DC Junkyard. Mike, you can be found on Twitter at...
Space_turnip.
James, you can be found on Twitter at...
Agile Harvey, and on Instagram, and on Twitch at Bang Average Sim Racer.
You didn't mention you streamed. And Martin, you can be found on Twitter at
Sega Collection.
That'll do it. I'm going to stop talking. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the next episode. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye bye. Keep healthy. Stay indoors.
Please stop this disc now.